It ain't been easy living with you all this time, the things that you've done to me, trying to pick at my brain what little bit's left of it. Hey, look here, I'm not always crazy, and I ain't sane, and I ain't drunk. By God, I got sense enough to know what you're doing.
Well, I don't want stuff like this on my video and messing it up.
It ain't gonna be in your video. It's in your biography.
Because all I want is good, honest dancing and people to enjoy themselves.
Hey everybody, this is Mike.
This is Daryl.
This is also Mike.
And this is Lindsay. And you are listening to Forgotten Failures. This is a podcast where we watch obscure or otherwise unknown movies that usually have failed in some way. And we see if they're worth having forgotten. This week, we are watching a movie that's near and dear to my heart. It's actually a documentary. It's the first documentary that we will have watched.
Yeah. Breaking new ground here.
It is... Dancing Outlaw.
All right.
It is a documentary about a man named Jessica White, and I am so excited
to show this to
you guys.
Now, you said Dancing Outlaw. Is that the title? Is it Dancing with an apostrophe?
Yes.
Okay, good. Nice. Good. I feel much better now.
Okay. You strongly object to G's?
Yeah.
Well, when you're talking about an outlaw, you got to be informal.
That's true.
For sure.
I wouldn't trust any outlaw that, you know, didn't bother to cut off the G.
Yeah, you have to be in touch with the common people. If you're on the lam, you need them to take you into their house. So you have to be a sort of a folk hero to them.
You don't want to be one of those highfalutin types.
Makes sense. So Jessica White, the White family. There's a couple movies and things about this guy, right?
They're fairly infamous.
Yeah. I remember Johnny Knoxville did something about him. I think it was about his family.
Yeah,
the Wild and Wonderful.
Yeah, the Wild and Wonderful Whites.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now that's a documentary that's like 30 minutes long, and I've heard that one's really good.
No, it was longer than 30 minutes.
It was
a full-on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was I think there were half-hour episodes, but I saw
a full-on documentary that was like an hour and a half-ish.
But I know it was like an MTV thing.
I saw something else then.
Okay.
Well, you're just thinking of that like Jersey Shore Go Hillbilly show they had.
I know you're talking about.
Buck Wild.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
You're not good.
Nope.
You're not Buck Wild.
One for Whites.
I do remember that show very briefly, but I guess I missed the craze.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm able to catch up on it now.
I think one of the cast members died trying to somersault into an empty swimming pool or something, so they canceled it.
In any case, the Wild Wonderful Whites that you recall that Johnny Knoxville produced. Mm-hmm. That was due to this documentary. The documentary that we're watching tonight set it all off. This is the very beginning of America's fascination with Jessica White and his family.
Ground zero.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of the epidemic that would be whiteism. Yeah,
this is patient zero.
www.white.
I mean, you guys know this is a documentary. You know it's about a real dude and his family. You know it's about rednecks. What do you think is going to happen in the movie?
I think from what I remember from that other documentary, they mentioned Jesco and he was like a tap dancer, but it was like his own form of tap dance. He like kind of invented.
Yeah.
So he's kind of like the I don't know, forefront of that. Mm-hmm. And so that's all I really know about this guy. And it was kind of interesting when they talked about it in that thing. So I'm expecting a little bit of that. I don't know if he's as crazy as his descendants are. So it'll be interesting to see that. But, I'm excited about it because I remember that other movie was really interesting. So if it's anything even remotely like that, it'll be intriguing. But what do you think, Daryl?
Backwoods tap dancing has already got my attention. So that's really all I need to know. Yeah, I'm going in with like very little knowledge. Like I know of Jessica White, but not enough to really form too much of an opinion. I know he invented some type of tap dancing, so I'm hyped for that. It'll be interesting to do a documentary. We haven't done one of those before, so it'll be interesting to talk about something that's actually happening, like these are real people. I don't know if that's going to make me feel any worse or better about saying terrible things about them later, but
because it's probably, running out of luck
it's probably
on real
going
events.
To come up. Yeah. I guess if I could just keep that in mind, then I guess I can get through this with no problem. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I think I'd rather watch a documentary about a lot of people than a documentary about one person, but this comes highly recommended, and he appears to be very crazy in probably more than one way, so it should hold my interest for the whole time. Yeah, so, and I don't even know if Jessica White is still alive or not. If he's like the patriarch of this family, maybe it's just people talking about him. So I really have no idea.
I think he is dead, isn't he?
The last that I heard anything about him was years ago, but he was still alive. He was kicking around. Right. Yeah, because they had, because of this documentary and what followed after this documentary, they actually have a Jessica White festival every year. Yes,
they did that in that documentary.
Yeah, that's gone on for 20 plus years, I think, now at this point.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
And that's what has spearheaded the booming economy of southeastern West Virginia.
But
the streets are literally paved with gold.
So I think it's time to watch our first documentary.
Yeah, let's do it.
Jesse can be three people. He is Jesse, he is Jesco, and he is Elvis. Jesse is the most beautiful man that I could have ever loved. But Jesco is the devil in himself.
And I tucked the butcher knife and held it up to her neck. I said, if you want to live to see tomorrow, you better start frying them eggs a little bit better than what you're frying. I'm tired of eating sloppy, slimy eggs.
So we're back.
Yes.
Yeah.
We watched Dancing Outlaw. And Dancing Outlaw 2.
Bonus.
And double feature.
The outtakes from Dancing Outlaw.
From Dancing Outlaw.
Dancing Outlaw.
Yes,
because it turns out that The Wild and Wonderful Whites of West Virginia is the only full-length documentary about Jessica White and his family.
Yes.
What we just watched was two episodes of the different drummer public television series, both of which were about Jessica White, and a bunch of outtakes, and we learned a lot about him, and it was pretty cool.
Yes, it was very interesting.
Yeah, we learned a lot about him and Boone County, West Virginia as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think this is like a microcosm of like West Virginia in general.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this county is next to the county that the Charleston is in. This isn't like that remote compared to a lot of West Virginia.
Yeah. Yeah, it's right there. It's I've been to this area, West Virginia, and it's crazy. There's a lot of trailer homes and a lot of people that are maybe not as cartoonish as the Whites, but there's a lot of that stereotype is out there.
Oh yeah, I've been to Charleston too, and there are like very very rural areas within the Charleston city limits.
Yeah,
all of West Virginia is rural basically, except maybe the college towns.
Yeah, where the colleges are.
Yeah.
And even the college towns.
And the Wheeling area, which is like part of the Pittsburgh coal mining area.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'll start the round. This was interesting. I feel like it was, when we looked at the credits, I was kind of surprised by how many people worked on this thing because it seemed like it was like a two or three man job. It's obviously dated. I think the second one was copywritten in 94. I don't remember when the other one was.
91.
So it's of that era, when documentaries weren't cheap to make, I guess, is basically the best way to say it, just because of film and all that stuff. But it's a very low, not low skill, but just a very kind of randomly put together documentary. The only thing that makes this excel is the characters and the people in it. I wouldn't go trusting any other film that these guys made just because the way that it's made isn't great, but they kind of struck gold. So is it worth watching? Yes. What's even more worth watching is the Wild and Wonderful Whites of West Virginia, the full-length documentary. But this is a really good like kind of backstory because it dives more into Jesco, which is really interesting as well. So, I recommend watching this. So, anybody else want to jump in?
Yeah, I think I'm too in the just watch it. You know, it's not necessarily something you get more out of with other people watching it with you. You could. I mean, it'd be fun. But you get just as much out of it watching it alone because the White family is just it's just a cast of characters. You really get to see Jesco, his character in this documentary, but you get like little snippets of his family and it's all just great. The cinematography leaves like everything to be desired, like literally everything.
Like some of the cuts. For West Virginia public television.
Yeah, that is a good point to make. Like this is, if you've ever seen anything on public access TV, then you can assume that same quality, but just rewind it back to like 1991 and remember how bad it used to be. It's all that and more. But I mean, even some of the things like the editing, like some of the storytelling, there's times where they'll start telling stories and they'll just cut, like fade out in someone's voice and start fading in with someone else's voice, which is like, that's the wrong way to do it. If there's a right way, I don't know that there is a right way, but there's definitely a wrong way, and it's that one. But beyond that, like the documentary, both documentaries, even like the, you know, extra features that you get when you go to the website and purchase the movie like we did, doing our part and not pirating it, which is what everyone should do.
Oh, yeah.
Because we don't support piracy, although we do support outlawism, which is conflicting. Mm-hmm. But either way, yeah, I definitely recommend watching it. It's worthwhile to watch and get to see some real down-home dancing. Lindsay, what'd you feel about this one?
Well, I mean, obviously, I recommended it. I already told you to watch it. Now I'm telling everybody else to watch it. Because it's an interesting documentary because of what Mike R. said. It's because of the people that they're profiling. And this is one of the first documentaries that I watched that really got me into documentaries and like seeing what you could learn about like a whole subset of people that you knew nothing, like you didn't even know they existed. And it's just truly interesting who they're profiling, the family that they're profiling. And even though they are short documentaries, they're not feature length. And I mean, the shortness is due to, I'm sure, budget constraints. I'm sure there's material that's probably just not there otherwise, because you did get a lot of Jesco repeating himself through his stories. But you also see, you can see some not great like production. That's like the production is quality is truly bad. But again, this is during a time when it wasn't that easy to edit a movie. It was a time when this kind of thing was harder to do, and it was but done by either amateurs or people newly out of like film school. But it's an interesting watch for sure. And Jesco White is quite a person. he is a character. And mm-hmm. as repulsive as some of his personality is, a lot of his personality is, there's something that's very like endearing and charismatic about him, despite mm-hmm. a lot of his awfulness. Because he is truly awful, especially to his wife. But yeah, he's also very charismatic. But yeah, I would totally recommend to watch it. The production quality for The Wild and Wonderful Whites is much better. And you're going to get a much more polished documentary out of that. And it's absolutely worth watching. But this is something, I mean, if you watch that first and you're like, hey, this is great and want to learn more, this like the Dancing Outlaw and Dancing Outlaw 2 are great short documentaries to just mm-hmm. learn more about this weirdo named Jesco from West Virginia.
Well, after seeing this, I think I'd rather watch some of the other documentaries made by the same guy for his series on West Virginia Public Television, because they sound very interesting. There's one about the industrialist that built crosses on mountains all over the country. There's one about a grandmother who fronts a rock and roll band. There's one about the Hare Krishna movement. So I think he's a pretty good documentarian for a guy with no budget who working for public television, not public access television, like PBS, you know. I thought this was very interesting, very worth watching. You know, yeah, you could tell that the outtakes were outtakes. We were kind of fooled because we watched something that's 87 minutes long and it's turned out to be 2 half-hour TV things and then some outtakes in between. But it was worth it. Yeah, I just love the way the guy talks, the way the people in the show talk. You know, it was like hearing people from 100 years ago. You know, that's just the kind of rural expressions they use. That made me smile a lot. That was weird, but it did. they just say things in slightly the wrong way. Now, we were all just constantly writing down quotes.
Yeah.
Oh, there's some choice quotes in this little documentary.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, should we even do the Mike D breakdown?
Because
there's really not like a plot.
There's zero need for it.
Okay.
There is no plot.
Yeah.
Everything
no
that
plot.
We talk about is going to be covered.
Yeah.
Like we're gonna go over everything.
I was thinking the same thing.
There is zero plot to either of these documentaries.
I was just gonna go through his story about the sunglasses.
Yeah, but then you would just talk about the entire thing.
He went through his story about the sunglasses at least 3 times.
Yeah.
This is how together our podcast is. We decide whether we're gonna do stuff on the fly.
Yeah, like the Mike D break D, you know, we'll just let Jesco White do his own break D. We'll just
that in now.
There it is. Expect to hear it right this second.
Got ready to turn around to walk back in the trailer. Steve gave out a holler. Said, get me now, you motherfuckers. F's. And that's true. Said, get me now, you motherfuckers. And shot 3 times. The first shot got my father. Second shot got my brother. And I guess a glance off the trailer, a third shot got hit because most shots hit the trailer. And one buck shot got me in the neck, and I said, oh, my God, I'm shot.
Yeah, but yeah, there isn't much. It really just is profiling this guy's life.
Yeah, there's no real plot. There's not even like a especially in the first one, there's not even like a story arc.
Well, the story I think is like. Sorry,
you're going to go into the Mike D. Break D anyway. No. I can feel it. I can feel you doing this. Okay. This is a story all about how.
This is a story all about how Jesco White's father was a legendary tap dancer, and Jesco White wants to be like his father, but he's crazy and ruined his brain by huffing lighter fluid, and he also tap dances, but he's not that good at it. The end.
Do it.
All right. I timed you there. I think you went slightly over.
Like, the story is that he wants to be like his father. That's his quest as a character.
Yeah. I don't even know if that's true. Like,
I think that the best way for, I think Norma put it best when she was talking about Jesco. Norma is Jesco's wife / not wife sometimes, but wife most of the time. and she is 10 to 20 years older than him.
Oh yeah. This time he was 35 at this time, and she's 17 years older than him.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So all she's right. Yeah, she's a good clip older than him. And the way that she explains Jesco is that she says that Jesco is three people. Mm-hmm. He is Jesse, who is the sweetest person on earth.
Yeah.
He is Jesco, who is the devil in himself, as she puts it. And then he is Elvis.
Yeah.
And she is so sincere about all three of those. Cause he really truly, and you see it in the way that he, addresses the camera, the way that he addresses his wife, his family. You can see those parts of him and you can kind of see how all the glue and paint and gasoline huffing and drinking and smoking and acid or whatever the fuck else he was doing, because he just really did anything.
Yeah.
Kind of rotted away at his brain.
Yeah,
and he acknowledges that at one point too. He says, like, don't get on, like, don't start pulling apart what little bit of brain I have left.
Yeah, picking at my brain, what little bit I have left.
Yeah, because it's truly, like, he was doing this stuff at, like, you know, teenage years,
young.
Like 13, 14, 15. And the way he talks and the way he kind of handles himself is basically like a 14-15-year-old child. He has a little bit more, he's picked up some things along the way, but I think the way he comprehends things is on that basic level.
And he has no impulse control.
No.
Yeah, that is very, very clear. And you get to see these, like, these the three Jescos.
Yeah.
He is the Holy Trinity incarnate. Because you see the Jesse, like, when you first open, when the documentary, like, first opens, it's like him on the porch of his trailer, and it looks like he's with his wife. They don't really tell you that she's his wife at the
time. Well, they each have their own stoops.
Yeah, because that's the thing.
They each have their own cinder block stoops.
Yeah, and she has like a little, like, one of those pillow pads, like the for your chair.
Yeah,
hers is padded. His is just a regular old cinder block.
Yeah. I feel like we didn't see the. I feel like we saw the regular Jesse guy, and we saw Elvis, and we didn't see the evil version of him because probably he didn't want to be filmed that way.
I think we got snippets of it when he said things like his wife,
I guess.
Yeah.
Well, see, because we did write down some pretty nice quotes here.
Yeah,
I think this
cuts.
Is where you get the little bits of Jesco, a.k.a. the devil, when he says things like, I've threatened your life many times to get you to stop talking.
Yeah, I think a lot of his, Jessica, the devil, we see when he's telling stories about the past.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we see a little bit when he gets a little angry I think that's only like the tip of the iceberg of what we saw.
That's him controlled. I think in front of the cameras, he's very controlled. And then,
for sure.
But you can tell that he doesn't even know that he is being a terrible person when he's, like, recounting these stories where he's threatening his wife.
Yeah. Because he says these things with just absolutely no inhibition at all. Like, he's not embarrassed when he says things like, you're going to go to bed. You're going to go to bed in a coffin. This is in reference to his wife telling him it's not maybe the best idea to go get a pair of sunglasses he left at a friend's house.
We'll get to the sunglasses story later. That's the masterpiece.
That's kind of the crux of the whole of Jesco's life.
But yeah, this guy, he basically... He grew up in rural West Virginia, and his father was a soft shoe tap dancer and a really good one. Because, I mean, he was recorded. He must have been pretty decent because there are recordings of him that look like pretty good. Like,
yeah, there was even like video, and the video looked like it was like Ed Sullivan or something
like
that.
He's on TV.
Apparently, at the time he was shot, he was being filmed for part of a Smithsonian documentary about different types of. Folk dancing from around the country.
Yeah, he was famous for what he did, and taught Jesco the same sort of, like, dancing.
He learned him.
He learned him all that stuff, and he gave him his shoes. I think he ended up with his shoes after his father's death. But Jesco, it was just kind of too burnt out to actually make anything of it. I think also tap dancing is not
it's not that popular. The 10-year-old or 11-year-old really wants to be doing.
Yeah, because they show Jesco dancing, but he's better than I am.
Yeah.
But I think I could learn. I think I could learn in maybe a week.
I don't know about that, but you definitely learn.
Well, they show him with like the people in Hollywood, and they were just kind of trying to do the same thing he did, and they were pretty much doing it.
Yeah, but I think there's a lot more nuance to what he's doing than you're giving him credit.
Yeah, because I think even when we were watching the part where he goes to Hollywood, when he was tap dancing to Reggae, it worked. Whatever he was doing, he knew what he was doing, like the rhythm and all of that. He had it.
Yeah.
I will say that I really enjoyed the White family names. Yes. Like Dorsey. Yeah. Dorsey was his brother.
Dorsey.
There's a Birdie White was his mom.
And that's not B-I-R-D-Y. That's B-I-R-T-Y. Yeah.
It's Birdie Mae White.
Birdie Mae White.
And his dad was named Donald, but he went by D-Ray.
Yeah, Donald Ray. D-Ray.
D-Ray White.
D-Ray White.
Yeah, like Ray McKesson.
I think I heard Jesco referred to his brother Dorsey as DC at one point.
Yeah,
or like DZ.
Yeah,
so I was like, that's.
I think he was referring to his brother there. I will say it's sometimes kind of hard to get like some of the pronunciations are just a little bit they don't hit the ear quite right.
No,
not
and
at
even
all.
When he is like. Genuinely talking to the camera clear as day, it doesn't come out 100% right. Like when he says things like, that's where they rehabilitation you. Things are just a little off. But yeah,
He doesn't know the word teach. It's always learned.
Yep. There is no
one
teach.
One of my favorite ones was what he was talking about, the age difference between him and his wife a little bit. And he's talking about how because of the way he was raised, he lost a czar in his heart to have children. And it took me a minute because I was like, it took all of us a minute. And then we got it. He was saying desire, but he was saying czar. Or just czar. Like he had a very thick accent. And it was very enjoyable. I think that's part of what made him charismatic, at least on screen.
Yeah.
I mean, when he's talking about his dad, he says, the names they called me, the bastards, the little son of the bitches. I know he didn't mean that.
Yeah, and he always tried to not curse, but he would curse anyway.
Yeah.
He was trying to be polite about it.
So I said, listen, motherfucker, motherfucker. never mind.
Yeah. It was like a kid like saying it, and they were like, "Oh, is that all right?"
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I can say it.
And there's this interesting transition between the first documentary and then the third one, the second one, after he'd clearly watched the first one over and over, and he started trying to say things in a really professional way in the second documentary.
Yeah. He enunciated a lot better.
Like he came up with all these cliched statements about himself instead of the honest statements about himself he had before.
Which, in certain ways, you know, I think it was that honesty, because while he is kind of a bad person, like he's also, there's something you really like about him. There's something that's kind of charming about him and his family. And I mean, you know, everyone around him, he's got a certain sort of charisma that is hard to quantify, especially when you hear the things he actually says. It's kind of like hard to put that with the guy who says,
because he's terrible to his wife.
He's downright terrible.
He's abusive. Yeah. And he's a straight up horrible person.
He held a butcher knife to her throat and said, I don't want to see any more of these sloppy, slimy eggs.
Yeah, if you want to live to see another day, you got to quit making these sloppy, slimy eggs.
And part of me wonders if it's just like he doesn't know any better. Like he should know better.
Well,
but
you can see when they're arguing, you can see that, like, she's trying to explain the way that she feels about something.
Yes.
And he just, all he can see is his anger.
Yes.
And that's all he can process. Mm-hmm. He can't process that, you know, she might have her own feelings, her own reason why she's, like, acting a certain way or feels a certain way or thinks a certain thing. All he can see is that something is making him angry. And in order for him to not be angry, she needs to do something about that.
Yeah. He said something very interesting. He said, don't make me mad. Yeah. I'm the kind of person who likes to be happy.
Yeah. He has like some inner demons, and she's someone that he projects on.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, and I don't think he can see it. Not that that excuses anything.
No.
It doesn't, but I think that's that's clearly his problem all throughout. Like he gets really, really angry and he just can't be consoled until he figures out something to do about that. And I think this is an excellent time to transition to the sunglass story, aka how his father was murdered.
We get to hear about
kind of
halfway,
bury the lead there when you call it the sunglass story, but that's what he calls it.
Yeah, and I think they even have like a little transition thing that says like the story about the sunglasses or something
that. That was in the outtakes when he does the even longer story about the sunglasses.
But yeah, the way that they do it is they talk about his daddy dying. And it's Birdie Mae, and Norma and Jesco. And they keep cutting back and forth between, and yeah. they would cut, but they wouldn't cut the audio.
Yeah.
They would keep just, the audio and then trailed fade it off. Out. Yeah. Like they were still talking in the background. Yeah. Everybody's just kind of talking over each other.
So as a novice editor myself, yeah. The first time I tried to do this, it was like, it makes sense to fade out somebody talking and fade in somebody else talking. But then when you do it,
never
it
works.
Doesn't make sense. Because what it sounds like is you're insulting the first person.
Yeah.
As if they're going, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. We don't have to hear this anymore.
Yeah.
And I mean, the way he'd been treating his wife up to this point, it really made it seem like she didn't have anything to say or add to the conversation.
Like, well, that's enough out of you. Let's just talk over her.
Yeah, so, it was ridiculous. So the basics are Jesco and Norma were at his father's.
Yeah, with Dorsey.
With Dorsey and another brother, I think. And
I think so.
The mom. At least those people. I'm sure there are more. Because they showed them partying, and they party a certain way, and it's kind of hard.
They go hard. I think they were over at Ponty's camper.
So they're partying. They're hanging out. He and Norma decide to go home, and it must be a fairly long trip home.
Yeah.
Because about halfway through, he realizes, I was letting Dorsey wear my glasses, and I forgot I was supposed to take them with me before. Yeah. He was probably too fucking high.
And they were very expensive glasses, or at least to Jesse, they were very expensive.
These are the glasses that he wears when he is in his Elvis persona.
Yeah.
So they're very important.
Yeah.
So think of those Elvis glasses with the big, the big gold ones with the holes in the side.
And I like how he kept saying, he's like, I'm not letting some you know what wear my glasses when I paid for them.
Some god... God.
Yeah. I didn't understand what he was trying to say there.
I think he was trying to say damn.
God damn, really?
Yeah. Which is funny because he didn't say damn, but he does say fuck like a minute later.
Yeah. Yeah. So he keeps referring to his brother Dorsey as this god something, you know.
I thought he was saying a guy.
No, he's saying God.
Yeah, he said God. That's why I was like, God fucking God. Yeah. I was trying to put curse words in there, and nothing was working.
It's like the opposite of when they have the word goddamn on the radio and they bleep the word God and leave damn in.
And he was so focused on the fact that he bought these so no one else should wear them,
and that they cost him a pretty penny and he worked hard for them,
so he gets into an argument with Norma because they're halfway home, and he tells Norma that he wants to turn around. She's driving and he has a gun in the car.
He always has a gun.
It's safe though.
It's in a safe place.
He's like, we need to go back. And she's like, I think she's probably right. It's probably late. Yeah. They've probably been drinking. It was probably getting rowdy when they left. Mm-hmm. And so she doesn't want to go back. And he's like, no, we're going back.
She's like, no, I want to go home and go to bed. And that's when he tells her, no, you can go to bed in a coffin unless we go back and get these glasses.
he wanted those glasses.
And we're rambling with this, but he tells the story and he repeats himself about four or five times. It's much worse than even we're doing right now.
Yes. So think of this as the abridged version.
They get back to the house, or the camper, a trailer. And he finds the glasses have been smushed and destroyed or something.
Yeah, he said ran over with a car, but I don't think they were
run over. But he says they weren't run over by a car because he didn't see any dirt in them. Oh. So he could figure that out. He knew that they were destroyed willfully as an act of malice by one of his enemies.
But he was very angry. He was kind of angry at his brother Dorsey because he was like, you were supposed to take care of these. Yeah. And then at some point, Dorsey skips off and then he comes back.
Yes.
And he has a bloody face. And looks like he got into a fight and a black eye. Yeah. And before they know it, these dudes who live across the way come by.
And the holler toughs or something.
Yeah,
like
they come by and they have some sort of beef with old
I think
DZ.
It's one of the guys that fought.
Yeah,
it looked Dorsey.
It sounded Dorsey got into a fight with someone else.
And then they followed him back, I think.
Yeah.
He said two guys worked me over like they were on acid. I think that's
Because when you do a lot of acid, the first thing you want to do is just whoop somebody's ass.
Yeah, but these guys come back and somehow the dad gets involved, old D-Ray.
Yeah, I think he was just outside.
Yeah, just outside. He was probably yelling at them to quit being jerks.
Yeah, they did say that he told them to get out of there, it was over. Yeah.
And so they hit him, the dad.
Yeah.
And that, because Jesco
was
already...
They pushed him.
And Jesco was already upset about these glasses. He was already hyped up and ready to jump. He was feeling froggy. And so he's... As Jesco explains, when he saw his dad getting shoved or hit, he just kind of blacked out. That was it for him. Mm-hmm. And he just beat the hell out of one of these dudes.
He got the red mist.
Yeah. And yeah. And then I think those dudes ended up beating the hell out of him.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he kind of beat them up, but then in the end he got beat up.
Yeah.
And then he thought the fight was over because they got beat up.
Yeah, one guy said like, yeah. All right, you got me, let me up, it's over. And then he gets up and I guess he then, I don't know if he pulled out a gun or if he went and got a gun.
Yeah, it sounds like he said he went and got a gun.
You would think you would see the shotgun if he had it with him.
He carried it out of the car into the trailer to get his glasses.
Maybe, I don't know. So yeah, some guy pulls out a shotgun and shoots. Who did he shoot first?
He shot D-Ray first.
D-Ray first.
Then Dorsey.
Then he shot Jesco, and then Dorsey was shot on his way into the house.
Yeah, he was trying to run away.
In the face. Yeah.
And the pellets are still there.
Yeah,
from the shotgun.
There's still holes.
Yeah.
So there's remnants of when their dad got killed.
And then Jesco said, "Oh my God, I got shot."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was in shock, he told us.
Yeah, he was in shock, choking on his own blood.
And then he thought about it later. And he thought, why did those guys come back with three shells up for their shotgun if they were only meaning to kill his dad?
Or to kill Dorsey.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I think they probably had more than three shells.
They
hit them all, so they're like, all right, we're done here.
All right, well, yeah, problem solved.
So he explains that those guys are planning to kill multiple people. And they only killed one person because Jesco came back to get his glasses. So I don't know how that follows. But that's why he was talking about the glasses for so
long.
But
anyway, that's the story of the sunglasses. Yeah. That's how it's brought up, that there's a story about sunglasses. And it turns out that it's actually the story of how his dad got killed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, which would seem like a very traumatic event, which he probably never processed, honestly.
And it seems that he's clearly like really... That still affects him quite a bit.
Yeah, he's haunted. He knows that his dad is gone, but he, like you said, I don't think he knows.
I think he blames his family.
Yes,
it
I think
seems
he
like
blames
his brother.
Yes.
That's one of many things where he says he's lucky to be alive.
Yeah,
like that,
yeah.
And the part where that in the story where he, like, one of his friends shot himself in the knee for no reason, and then he said, "Well," and then Jesco shot himself in the leg for no reason as well.
Well, no, he was drinking. He was him and his friend had just smoked two joints of African black, pot.
Sure,
yeah, he's a black pot.
Yeah, African black pot. Mm-hmm.
And drunk about two quarts of Stroh's beer.
Yeah.
And then they did something else, too.
I think he said volumes.
Yeah, volumes.
It sounded like volumes.
Yeah, and then and it's funny because he said he shot himself, but you couldn't feel. He was like, we were numb from
our
heads.
From our brains to our toes.
Yeah, from our brains to our toes.
So it was like a bee sting.
Yeah. And he was like, and you wouldn't think, because I make my living off dancing, that I would shoot myself.
Up in the leg.
Wait. You were... I mean, a normal man might shoot himself in the leg, but not a dancer.
Yeah, not a dancer. No,
this is my livelihood.
Yeah,
that's my moneymakers.
And yeah, the first, what I'm going to call a short documentary, because even if it was an episode of a show that this guy did on PBS, it's still a documentary.
Yeah, definitely.
So the first one was really just Jesco and his life, and it's about half an hour. The second one is about Jesco getting called up by Tom Arnold to come and appear on the
Tom Arnold,
to appear on the Roseanne show.
Yeah, the TV show.
Yeah, the TV show. Because at that time, I think Tom Arnold was also managing Roseanne on top of being married or something
I don't know if he's a producer of the show or something.
Yeah, he was involved in the show.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Enough to pull some strings and get who he wants on the show.
Yeah, so I think he said later on in the thing that someone had shown him this... tracked down this video and
he heard about it.
Yeah, he was very intrigued and he thought it was fascinating, so they reached out to Jesse and tried to get it just to get him on the show.
This is pre-internet.
Yes.
So because he was talking
that's
about
a lot of legwork.
These VHS tapes are circulating around Hollywood.
Yeah,
everyone
he had an assistant
watching.
Go out and get this tape for him, and then he and Roseanne went out to like other people and showed them all this tape because they needed other people to see it. It's amazing.
Yeah. We got to learn that at this time, before he was fired and kicked out of her house, Tom Arnold called Roseanne Rosie. Which is kind of cute.
Yeah.
Well, why wouldn't he?
Yeah, I mean, this is like to get back a little bit, this is like the viral video of like the pre-internet day.
Absolutely. This
which
is one
it's
of those...
crazy. It's like Faces of Death or something. Yeah. Like, it's one of those, like,
you pass off to your friend.
Yeah, you never bought it, but someone had one. You'd be like, ooh, I kind of want to see that.
Or the original South Park, like, thing they made. There was like a 1 minute long video of, like, Santa Claus
Jesus
fighting or something that got them the TV
show. This is local public, like... public television in West Virginia.
This is
reaching
Boone County
reaching
television.
Hollywood.
Yeah, reaching Tom Arnold.
Tom
Arnold, the top of the Hollywood pyramid.
And but anyway, so the second documentary, which is an equal length to the first one, is about Jesco getting this call, living in a swank ass house now. Yeah. He was in a really shitty trailer before.
Yeah.
But now they have like this cabin in the woods, and it has like a huge porch. It's awesome.
It's like a 2-story thing.
It's
like
a nice cabin.
Got like goats and shit.
Yeah. Half underground, like
got
basement.
Some roosters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Roosters.
Yeah. It's got a little bit of everything, and but it shows him going to Hollywood and filming. And there's really not much to it.
No.
A lot of it is just like him being very excited to be in coach.
I think he said this is the first time he's ever flown. Yeah. So that was exciting.
Yeah, this is his first trip, like, really trip. Anywhere.
It was probably his first time maybe outside of like a 50 or 100 mile radius of where he was born.
Yeah.
Might be the first time he saw the ocean.
Yeah, I think it was. Probably I think was he said something about the Los Angeles ocean and seeing it for the first time.
It was so cute because he was like, he was very hyped up. Just on everything was new and different and awesome for him. And even when he, like, they showed him, they didn't show the inside of his hotel room or motel room, but they showed him, he's like, I'm Jessica White, and this is the hotel I'm staying at. And it's him and his key, and he's just, like, kind of, like, trying to get his key into the, like, it lasts way too long.
Yeah.
But it's really cute how excited he is about, like, really small things.
Yeah. And it really dates itself because it's a legit key. It's not, like, a card that you slide through the thing and get frustrated because it doesn't open the first time.
I will say one of the things that happens, it happens in both, but it happens best in the first one is that there's one part where they show Jessica White tap dancing, and they zoom out, and it's on a TV.
Oh yeah.
And then Jessica White is dressed in like this white, like off-white suit.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's some mighty fine tap dancing.
Yeah, very Troy McClure there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's good, ain't it? Yeah. Anyway, here's my video. Everyone should watch it as often as possible.
Yeah.
It reminds me of those like training videos or something, and it's like, oh, hi, I didn't see you there.
It was exactly
welcome
that.
To my home.
Yeah. Yeah, and he did it again in the Dancing Outlaw Goes to Hollywood, where it was like he had a copy of his DVD, and he was trying to sell it.
VHS, not DVD.
VHS. Yeah. Yeah, sorry, VHS. And he was like in a studio.
Yeah, he was trying to audio mixing studio.
Yeah, he was somewhere in Hollywood. But,
one of them big old Hollywood studios.
But yeah, it was great. And I really wish he would have done more of that kind of stuff, because he was awesome at
this
it.
This is the point where he comes up with all these like showbiz cliches about himself.
And you know what? We really didn't talk too much about his Elvis side, because...
Yeah.
He's obsessed with Elvis. Like, he's got an Elvis lamp. He's got the velvet Elvis
painting. He has a room.
He's
like
got a
whole
room.
He's
where
got
he
this
plays,
Elvis lamp.
Yeah. He plays
Elvis.
Yeah.
Tough.
So he's got
shit.
He's got this.
Yeah, he's got the Elvis room. Yeah.
He's got the Elvis room. And so
it's
the whole point
of
this room.
The same blankets in it.
Yes. He's got two blankets. He's got Elvis plastered on the wall, plus
Marilyn
Jesus.
Monroe. Yep. And
Marilyn
Jesus,
Monroe.
Eagle.
And an eagle.
Yep.
And then he's got a mic, like a shitty ass microphone just hanging from the ceiling.
By your standards.
No, that's a shitty microphone.
I don't think it's attached.
I don't
anything.
Even know if it's plugged in, to be honest.
No, he makes recordings. So he kind of heard his recordings in the background, which is just him singing over Elvis records.
Yeah, he plays the record tape or the Elvis tape, and then he just sings into the microphone.
Okay. And by microphone, I mean the equivalent of a baby monitor from a string in a ceiling.
That's basically that's a good description.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it kind of looks like one of those old school, like the mic that would drop down into a boxing ring before. Like,
no, it was shitty, no, you're, really you're giving it way too much credit.
But much shittier.
Yeah.
But it had that sort of...
It was a little square plastic box is what it was.
But yeah, he actually, the thing, like, Jessica was actually not a bad looking dude.
No. Especially, especially when we see a couple different versions of him. There's like clean shaven one where he looks like a normal dude. And then there's like the stubble version of him, where even there he looks like a normal dude. Like he looks like Johnny Knoxville or like something of that era.
The friendliest, like most humble version of him is the version with the beard.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was like the first footage that was filmed, and then he got mad and wouldn't let them film for a while.
Yeah, I don't know. And then he's got like full grown out beard where he looks a little homelessy.
And there's a part, like he has really long hair in some parts that is just like goes straight down. And it's like stubble too, and he has like a kind of rocker look to him. But he has all sorts of looks. And Elvis is one of them.
Yes.
He's absolutely obsessed. When he goes to Hollywood, they show him on like Venice Beach or something like that. Some beach, and he's getting like California Hollywood souvenirs.
Yeah.
And all his souvenirs are Elvis.
Those the Last Supper with Elvis as one of the apostles and Laurel and Hardy and Marilyn Monroe and stuff.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
So when he meets Tom Arnold and all the people at the TV show, they just think he's an Elvis impersonator from West Virginia. They're not quite sure what he is other than being an Elvis impersonator.
Well, I'm sure most of them hadn't seen like the actual documentary or the actual show that he came from. Mm-hmm. Most of them are just working. they show him. He seems, they didn't show the actual clip from Roseanne that he was in because they didn't have the rights to it.
Yeah.
But it seems like he did a good job.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm pretty sure they aired it, so yeah. It couldn't have been that terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, it was kind of neat seeing the soundstage too, because they showed a lot of like,
yeah,
the,
a lot of like back, yeah, back, not backstage. I guess it is kind of backstage.
Yeah, but yeah,
on set.
Yeah. Yeah, on set.
And John Goodman, that was a really pleasant surprise.
Yeah, John Goodman's awesome.
Oh yeah,
and they did show this like improv that John Goodman and Roseanne were doing, where they're like pretending to be a hillbilly couple, and she hit him with a frying pan.
Yeah. It was like a very Flintstonesy type of thing.
Yeah. But yeah,
just some light foreshadowing for John Goodman.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Oh man.
But there was like one pretty major point of contention on this set of Roseanne. Mm-hmm. See, Jessica White, and you get to see them in both documentaries. And anytime he's talking, he has a lot of tattoos.
Prison tattoos.
These are shitty prison tattoos.
I mean, like you've been out huffing gas all night, and your buddy has a tattoo gun. You're like, yeah, why not?
I think he even said like one time, like he was pretty high on huffing and drinking and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Well, when you're in prison, you need to fit in. And one way to do that is to get the same tattoos as your buddies who live near you.
Which is, I guess, Love and Hate Across the Knuckle, classic.
Yep. Classic.
Nice. Also, a bunch of swastikas, I guess. Or at least just one.
I think it was just one. It wasn't even like a real swastika. No, it was like...
The guy who did it messed it up.
Yeah, he didn't know what a swastika looked like.
It almost looked like the number 8.
Or like an infinity symbol, a little bit.
Yeah,
like a boxy, like the Stussy sign, but...
He was really,
But like squares.
But I mean, he was really high when he did it.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, and I mean, he was in jail. He was probably 14 high on gasoline in jail.
Yeah.
After he got sent to the juvenile center after he got sent to the hospital for a bath.
Yes.
Tom Arnold is obsessed with the swastika that's on his
hand. Roseanne was very upset about it too.
Rosie. Like, Rosie didn't like them tattoos on your hands.
No. So Tom Arnold, like being like a decent dude that he is, I guess, basically just gives him money, goes, hey, you need to go get that covered up. And Tom Arnold even says, like, I don't think he fully understands what that means. And
he says it in front of him. He's like side hugging the dude, and Tom Arnold looks in the camera. He's like, I don't think he knows what a swastika means.
Yeah. And Jesse like fulfills this later on when he's getting the tattoo. Like, he really doesn't. Like, he knows what it is, but he doesn't know what it kind of represents.
Yeah, well, he's like, I asked some friends of mine, some biker friends of mine.
who were watching him get his tattoo done.
He's like, I asked him what this swastika means, and they told me that, you know, millions of people, even babies, Hitler killed.
Yeah. Like, now, at the point where he said, I asked my biker friends what the swastika meant.
Yeah.
I was worried that they were going to say, the swastika is a great symbol. It symbolizes everything that we in the Aryan nation stand for.
But he got told, and his suit, like, he truly, like, he seemed to be disgusted by it. Like, he didn't want.
He seemed
like
genuinely disturbed that he had that on him.
One thing that they really. I'm not sure how much I believe it, but one thing that they really pushed all of them, like Bernie May, Dorsey, even Norma, they pushed that Jessica was Jesse, just a sweet person who loved everybody, same as his daddy.
Yes.
Just loved everybody and everybody loved him, which I kind of believe, but I also kind of believe that they're probably all voting a certain way.
Yeah, they're all a little delusional too.
It almost seems like they probably love everybody if they're white Americans.
Christians. Well, those are the only people they know.
I feel like that's true. Yeah, I feel like
Boone
that's,
County, West Virginia must be 99%.
They have this like version of themselves that they see that's based on, and why wouldn't it be, but it's just based on their very local kind of upbringing.
I mean, when you're stuck in an area where you don't really see too much culture outside of what you know, I think that's just, it's not making an excuse, but it's an
explanation.
It's, it's an explanation.
Like, you know, when he says he really didn't know what a swastika really meant,
I believe it.
Probably doesn't have really
like,
much
extent,
past, you know, much more of an education than maybe past like maybe middle school.
Yeah, and even at that, he was huffing lighter fluid and stuff back then.
And he was saying, "Oh, sure, you give me a fifth of 100 proof whiskey, I'll drive for you."
And this is like, mind you, he's like 14.
Yeah.
He's saying the things that one of his friends, a grown man, gave him some whiskey after he had already been like huffing gasoline all day.
Yeah.
As he said, he's like, "Oh yeah, if you give me a fifth of whiskey, yeah, sure, I'll drive you somewhere."
Yeah, that was the fun. That was probably the funniest story he had.
I like because
it ended up with him. Him driving into a river, and then his friend hit his head on the dashboard and woke up and said, "Where are we?" He said, "Where do you think we are? We're in the river."
There's a lot of stories. I like the story about how he met his wife, Norma. It was basically they were out doing criminal things, and his sister was going to hang out with her boyfriend.
Criminals. They were criminals.
Criminals. Criminals. They're doing criminal things, and they hitchhiked a lot, which was kind of interesting. And I guess his sister knew Norma, but he didn't know that. And I don't know. Somehow she picked them up. And then what did he say? He said, "I think I'm falling in love with you," because he thought that she was a rich girl.
Yeah.
Because she had a really fancy shirt on. And I think the only reason why he said he liked her was because he thought she was a rich girl.
Yeah. And she didn't think that he was talking to her.
No.
Because she's like, "Oh, that's nice." Because she thought that he was talking to the girl that was next to her, which was his cousin.
Yeah.
Because that's the more natural.
Yeah. Which, that's more West Virginia thing to do.
And the funniest part is he was like, you know, being the criminals that we was.
Yeah.
I was actually trying to rob her. That was my intention. I was going to rob her that night, but I ended up falling in love with her.
Yeah. Yeah, so I didn't get a chance to rob her.
Yeah. He wanted to steal her car and take her money. That was what he wanted to get into her car so he could get her money and then steal the car.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's funny is you can kind of tell that his family doesn't get his relationship with Norma. No. They accept it for what it is.
I don't even know if they accept it. I think they
know that there's nothing they can do about it at this point.
His mom says he loves that woman. I don't know why.
Yeah. And she says it so many times. Like anytime she mentions Norma, she's like, I mean, he loves her.
I don't know.
I don't get it.
Yeah. No one likes Norma.
No one likes her.
Except Jesse.
Yeah. And they all think that she's trying to take him away or like feed him information that breaks him away from the family.
Which I don't really think is true. I think Jesse's just kind of had enough of them, to be quite honest. Like I think he likes them as he understands that they're family, but I think he also understands that they're kind of breeding him to be something that he doesn't want to
be.
Holding
him back.
I think that
in a sense, yes.
Yeah, I think that he probably deals with some mental health issues.
Oh yeah. I was going to say if he were born in any other time or any other like area to anything, especially now, like
he'd be on treatment. And I think that it seems like his family exacerbates whatever issue he has.
Yep.
They just kind of get into fights and all that kind of
stuff.
And
I think he's way too nice of a person to tell them that to their face.
And that's the thing. I mean, you know, that's the thing we keep coming back to. I mean, you know, we've talked about all the really, really negative things about his life, but he does seem like a genuinely really nice guy.
You just don't want to be in a relationship with him because he's a fucking terrible person to be in a relationship with. He's probably horribly abusive to Norma.
I mean, he threatened to blow her brains out on multiple occasions during the documentary.
And then got mad at her because he's like, "I don't want them showing this kind of stuff
in my movie."
Yeah, it's like, quit fucking saying that kind of stuff.
Don't say that stuff.
Quit being that person, and it won't be. And I like her. She's like, "It won't be in your movie. It won't be in your film."
My name is Norma Jean White, and I'm Jessica White's wife. And I've been married to him for, well, it was 13 years, and we divorced for 10 months and remarried, and we've been married 2 months now. And that's our life up until now.
He loves that woman. For some reason, I don't know why, but he does.
You know, this is why you know he genuinely, I mean, he is not a good guy, and it's not necessarily an excuse, but he said at some point to Norma, I guess it was some story about them, he probably threatened to blow her brains out over some eggs, but he said, "I'm hot, and I want you to forgive me."
And
I feel like this is probably like a constant throughout the marriage.
Because he can't see past his own emotions, I don't think.
No.
And I'm not sure what Norma gets out of the whole deal.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
But maybe he's she's there. Yeah.
Who knows?
Oh, that's right. Because he was going to take her to Heartbreak Hotel, the Heartbreak Hotel bedroom, and show her a good time.
A good time.
That's after he got back from Hollywood.
Yeah.
That was how they ended that.
Yeah, that's how the second outlaw ended.
And the thing is, Norma seems like a sweet lady. She is not a looker.
No.
And she's also older.
Yes.
So she looks like a grandma, and Jesco just looks like a mid-30s dude. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, she looks a lot more like his mom. Like,
her aunt or something.
Yeah.
I will say that, like, it was really good foresight. Like, it was a good call for Jesco to realize that he didn't want children.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't have the capacity. And maybe that's part of the reason why he wanted someone older.
It's not a bad idea.
He didn't want the risk of having kids.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, if that's the case, then, you know, fuck it. Yeah. And it is probably best that he's never raised any children.
Yes. Oh, for sure.
He's not stable enough for
those
that.
Those would be hellhounds.
It's good that he recognized that in some way.
Well, they'd probably be raised by his sister, Birdie May.
Yeah.
Birdie May's his mom.
That's his mom.
Oh, yeah. His sister is what?
Bo. I don't know, I forget what her real name was.
Yeah, yeah, I called think her his Bo. Sister would yeah, probably be the absolute last choice.
We just saw her in this, one scene where she's driving around drunk and doing donuts.
She's drinking tough, a Miller's she's tough beer.
Mutton. She's tough mutton.
Which is a thing that yeah. people do with vehicles. And so there's a scene where they show that Jesco's just kind of partying in this hauler area that they have. Yeah. And it's just like a trailer with with this like plastic
sunroom,
sunroom.
Yeah,
I don't even know.
Yeah,
but there are 2 to 3 vehicles that they're running around the yard and tearing up the yard with, which is just mud.
Yeah,
none have license plates.
Everybody's drinking.
Yes,
and there are children just running around where all these
dodging
all these cars.
The cars. Yeah. It's like a very small demolition derby almost.
Yeah,
it is, and she's just really going for it. Like she's
gunning it. She's
she almost
it
hit
reverse.
The cameraman at one point.
Yeah,
and I mean you could see that was clearly not scripted because he's like, hey, whoa.
And she's just laughing her ass off. Yeah,
and
with her Miller's beer, just
Miller's
there.
Beer, yeah.
And just a taste of like what the Wild Wonderful Whites is like.
Yeah.
It opens up with the sister, her, and she's just given birth and she is pissed the fuck off because the hospital has called Child Protective Services to have the baby taken because they've witnessed her doing drugs, like crushing up pills and snorting them at the hospital.
Yeah.
And she doesn't understand why they
what's
would take
wrong
her,
with that.
Yeah, why they would take her baby away over that.
Yeah. That's some bullshit.
That is the kind of person she is, and that's the kind of
nanny state bullshit.
Yeah.
Isn't it normal to get painkillers during a birth?
Yeah. Didn't say how you gotta get
epidural.
Yeah. I don't even think these were like pills that were prescribed to her.
No.
But yeah, and I she probably is a known person within those systems.
Oh yeah.
I'm guessing.
For sure.
Yeah.
We don't want to make
We don't want to make assumptions.
Yeah. But there's a chance.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's like the whole family is they're a weird, like there's a lot of ego there where they kind of do what they want. There's very little consequence.
Yeah.
If you want to look into the eye of white privilege, then this is it. Cause these are not rich
like
people by
super
any means.
Unwarranted white privilege too.
These
well,
are,
they don't have any money.
These are no, that's all white privilege is.
They're better cause they're white.
Yeah, this just goes to show that you can be a shitty person and break laws constantly and be high and drunk fucking constantly. And cops still not going to shoot you for it. Like the things that he got away with doing would have gotten other people just dead.
Mowed down.
Yeah. They would have been dead a long time ago.
Yeah. This is a man who said, you know, when he was a teenager that he, after huffing a lot of gasoline, he broke into a grocery store to steal more gasoline to huff, which he did do, and then went home. And then the police came to his house and were like, yeah, we know your son did this because he took the gasoline. So obviously,
the cops just see these people as like members of a gypsy camp or something. Well, as long as they're only hurting each other, we'll just ignore them.
But he's been known. He's someone who's probably known to the police, and I guess it's a much smaller town, so it's much easier.
I was just
going to
say,
these
cops are probably friends and or family of a lot of these people as well.
Because I mean, they're just not. I mean, there's just not too many people in Boone County, I would imagine.
But yeah, he's managed to get away with a lot in his life. How he's not spent more time in prison, maybe he's not committing those kind of crimes where he can get a lot of time, and maybe just getting high all the time and drunk driving and whatever doesn't carry that much.
Well, he did say that he stopped drinking, so maybe after one of his stints that kind of cleared him off a little bit.
I was disappointed in the outlaw element. It's like he committed a lot of crimes, but they were all when he was a teenager. Now he's like 35 and all he does is kind of imitate Elvis and threaten his wife.
Which, I mean, that is a crime.
Yeah, that is a crime.
And his brain is fucking gone at this point.
It's mush.
It's gone.
So it's a story of a man who could have emulated his father and gone on to fame and fortune, except that he damaged his brain with lighter fluid.
Yeah. Yeah. This movie was all about quotes. I think we should just end it with some quotes.
Do it.
There was two things in the beginning of the movie that I forgot to mention. It opens up and he's talking about his shotgun. And he describes it as a 32 squirrels shotgun.
Because
that's how many squirrels he shot with it.
This year.
This year. And then it also opens up with him, like Daryl said, with a boombox on a bridge.
That's the best.
And the song is, if you want to go to heaven, you got to raise a little hell.
Yeah.
And that basically sums up him to a T. And I'm pretty sure that's why he's like singing it and all that. But I think there's a couple of choice cuts, quotes-wise. There was one where he said, I'm going to go back to my hotel like a groundhog to his hole to catch some Z's. That was perfect. And then, there was one when they were running from the cops or something like that, and they go, they're getting in trouble, and he goes, we all take off like someone jogging for exercise.
And he said it with the inflection of like someone jogging for like exercise, like for real. People do that shit.
I've seen that on TV once.
I've heard of this. Is it a soft J?
Jogging? Yeah.
But oh man!
And then when they were speeding, when he was driving drunk and he drove into the river, he said the car was like the Untouchables car. The wheels were squalling on it.
Yeah.
This movie was really worth watching just as a character study. So,
any more quotes?
No.
Nope.
I think I'm all tapped out.
Yeah.
Well,
it ends. Just go doubt.
The quote at the end is he's sitting on the beach and he says, well, I may just be a hillbilly country boy, but I'll tell you one thing. This cat made it to Los Angeles. Ocean by the beach.
Yeah, and I will say that this documentary and the subsequent like documentaries afterwards and show whatever have made Jesco a weirdly famous figure in West Virginia to the point that he has a festival every year dedicated to him. There's a Jesco White festival that is ongoing.
Yeah.
So you can still go and celebrate Jesco White.
Yeah, and I think his family doesn't like it because they're not on like great terms with him anymore.
No, he went Hollywood.
Yeah, he got a little too big. But it's interesting. Check it out.
Yep, we'll see you there. Broadcasting live from Jesco Fest 2017.
We got ready to leave, and we got halfway home. I told my wife, I said, Norma, I said, I forgot my sunglasses at Mommy's. And something's just telling me to go back and get my sunglasses. I want to go back and get my sunglasses. I said, I just let Dorsey borrow him to wear. I didn't give them to him. I want to go back and get them. She said, Jesse, it's off a long way to go back and get the sunglasses. I said, we'll go back tomorrow and get them. I said, no, man, by God, we're going to go back tonight and get them. I said, I paid for them, and ain't no other God, you know what, going to wear my glasses after me spending my money for them. Them's mine and mine only. I said, I just let him use them. And I said, I will go back and get them. She said, no, I don't think that's the ideal. They're drinking, Jesse. And said, I'm tired, so let's go home and go to bed. I said, no, you're going to go to bed, all right. You're going to go to bed in a coffin if you don't turn this vehicle around and go back and get my glasses. See, that's how the drinking and stuff had me at the time. This is true. And I said, I'll blow your effing brains out all over the dash. And I said, I won't hesitate 1 minute, ma'am. How doing? I said, I want to go back and I want to get my shades.
Jesse said, we're going back to printer. He said, I left my sunglasses up there. So I just went on back to printer, and when I got there, I
pissed off because you wanted to come on home, and my costly sunglasses had to lay up there with some other weirdo wearing them. I said, I want my glasses. All right, we'll go back.
I want you to stay. He said, we had trouble here. Mamie took Mom and them across the hill and said, I'd like for you to be here. Mommy will be back in a little bit. And
Dorsey walked up to me with his mouth bleeding and looked like his eyes black, swelled up. I got to think, my God, boy, what's...